Hello, y'all. This is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach, bringing you Snacks for the Brain, episode number 56. Well, it's been a busy month at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach as the crew proceeds apace on the new Vanderbilt School for Science and Math. Meanwhile, I'm working feverishly myself in my own computer lab at University School of Nashville to shepherd my kindergarten through fourth grade kids through the final days of their school year and on out into summer. I had a personal loss early last month that's taken me a while to absorb, and now I'm looking into my own summer and I'm preparing for a trip down to Atlanta, Georgia to attend this year's National Educational Computing Conference. I'm going to be giving a presentation on Windows podcasting tips, tools, and strategies for success, and I'll be moderating a Birds of a Feather session on virtual worlds and Second Life. I'll also be attending many workshops and seminars, catching up with old friends and making some new ones, I hope. Look for me there if you're coming down south to Atlanta. That's June 24th-ish. If you want to learn more about this conference, just Google NECC 2007 and you'll find out what you need. All right, let's get right down to this episode with a brief audio clip I captured during a marvelous virtual scientist video conference recently held with students in Massachusetts, Louisiana, and New Jersey. Brenna Simons, Vanderbilt AIDS Outreach Director, and Dr. Kira Richter Oswald lined up 15 plastic water-filled cups to start things off, lined them up right there on the table, and added a sodium hydroxide solution to one cup. Sodium hydroxide is a clear chemical that reacts to the addition of phenylsaline by turning bright pink. The phenylsaline wasn't added just then, though. Brenna took the cups and proceeded to randomly mix the fluids, picking up one, spilling it into another, setting that one down, picking up another, and adding it to yet another one, repeating that for just a minute, kind of randomly. Then she sort of dramatically took an eyedropper and dropped a bit of the phenylsaline into each cup. The final result? Over half the cups were bright pink. The lesson? It can be dangerous to share fluids with others, and you never know if you're infected until symptoms begin to show up. Listen to the interchange.
You have people sharing fluids here.
Basically all different types of fluids.
All kinds of different fluids, which we're going to go over in our quiz. And so, with just a few little exchanges here, and all the while, none of us know which cup is infected. So we've started with one cup, and we're going to use our little nifty indicator here. And if the cup has been infected, the indicator is going to make it turn pink. So let's see. Well, that didn't take much. That's one. Clear. Whoa.
Bam.
You guys can see this?
Yep.
It's going to be positive. And that's why we need to let you guys know the facts so you know about HIV transmission and you can protect yourself. So we're going to start. You guys got a quiz, correct?
Everyone fill out the quiz.
Okay.
So we need both schools to mute their mics. We'd like both schools to mute their mics, and then we'll go over the questions. Thank you.
So we're going to go over question one, and then we're going to ask Mount Everett what they thought the correct answer was and have them tell us. And then we'll ask the next question.
All right. The presenters and participants proceeded to share a lively dialogue generated by questions and answers from a quiz the AIDSO group had sent out to the schools prior to the video conference. I'll share a little bit of that with you all, then we'll move on out to a tech tip and beyond.
Okay, Mount Everett. HIV is spread by sharing needles for injection drugs, including steroids.
Yeah.
True, right? And so, why do you think that's true? What's going on when you share a needle? What gets up in that needle?
Blood.
And the thing about needles and blood, that blood can stay up there for a week. It's in a vacuum environment, so the blood will stay for a long period of time. So you don't want to use someone else's needle ever. Doesn't matter how long that between uses. You want to get clean needles. And first, I would suggest you don't use needles at all, but if you're going to use needle, make sure it's a clean, sterile needle. And that includes steroids. I know a lot of people think using steroids is going to be safe, but you really need to make sure you're using a clean needle at all times.
Okay, question number 10. Mothers can give HIV to their babies.
True.
Good. And how does that happen? How does that happen? What are the methods?
How is the mom transferring HIV to her baby? What fluids are they coming in contact with?
Breast milk.
Right, that's after birth, but during birth?
Blood,
vaginal secretions, right, if they have a vaginal birth. Does anyone know what happens when a woman who is HIV positive, at least in the United States, is pregnant, what she needs to do? Well, they put the mom on drugs that help lower the virus, the viral load, the amount of virus in your blood, and so that the incidence of transmission is very low. So in the United States now, it's very rare for a mom to give birth to an HIV positive baby. And so if anyone were in a position where they're HIV positive and pregnant, they need to go to their doctor as soon as possible to start prenatal care so that they can lower their viral load in order to deliver their baby safely.
Okay, thank you, Brenna and Kara, for a great and informative presentation. If you didn't catch my interview with Brenna on episode 53 of Snacks for the Brain, get on over to blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4theb and do so post-haste, pronto, and quickly like a bunny. It's time for a tech tip tidbit, y'all.
Tidbit time for tech tip tip.
Hey, the computer tip of the week once again from Dr. T at completelyfreesoftware.com via worldstart.com. Question: how is a CDR actually burned? Is it etched as vinyl records were, or are there actual tiny burn marks on the disc? Great question. Here's the answer from Dr. T. CDs are a great example of how fast technology moves. 10 years ago, CDs were high technology. I remember buying an expensive computer just to get a CD player, CD-ROM. Today, we burn CDs at the drop of a hat to play in our cars. But it's still good to know how this stuff works. The technology is pretty cool. Digital information, including music, is stored in binary code, ones and zeros. To represent all those ones and zeros, a CD contains tiny spots that are highly reflective or poorly reflective. A laser is used to read the sequence of spots. The sequence can then be interpreted as sounds. A CDR disc has two important layers of material sandwiched between plastic. One is a layer of metal, typically aluminum. In front of that is another layer, a special dye. The aluminum layer is highly reflective. The dye is mostly transparent, so overall the disc is completely reflective. But the dye can be changed by the laser in your CDR drive. The laser heats and burns tiny spots on the dye layer. The burned spots become non-transparent. They block light from reaching the aluminum layer. So a finished CDR ends up with both highly reflective and poorly reflective spots. These are the ones and O's, respectively. Your CDR drive uses a strong laser to burn a disc's dye layer. Typically, CDRs have a second, weaker laser used for playing. It is too weak to affect the dye's transparency. The chemicals used for the dye layer eventually degrade, ruining the disc. Disc manufacturers use various dye formulas, some sturdier than others, but the cheapest last only a couple years. And price tag aside, it's difficult to discern the quality of CDR brands. I always buy name brands. Rewritable discs use a layer of crystallized material instead of a dye. A CDRW, read-write, drives laser melts tiny spots of the layer. These spots cool too fast to recrystallize. That makes them opaque. Those spots are zeros because they do not reflect light. Crystallized spots, which are transparent, are ones. When data is erased on a CD read-write, the spots are melted again, but they're heated to a lower temperature and cool slowly enough to recrystallize. Commercially produced discs, like software or music albums, are not burned. They use tiny bumps or dips to represent ones and zeros. The dips and bumps are molded directly into a disc's plastic. The sequence is then coated by a layer of metal, usually aluminum. These discs can last for decades. That's it for episode number 56 of Snacks for the Brain. Music earlier in the show was from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com, and I'm going to lead you out with Fountain of Life from the group Artemis, magnatune.com.
We are not evil.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by articles at Vanderbilt Center Science Outreach. Check out our website at fireoutreach.org.
Show notes at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4theb.